Welcome to the Business Benchmark Group podcast, where you'll learn how to think strategically about your business and discover that while business is not easy, it doesn't need to be hard. With over 20 years experience in turning stalling businesses into thriving enterprises, here is your host, Stefan Kazakis, the founder and CEO of Business Benchmark Group.
Welcome to another episode for the Business Benchmark Group podcast, where we dive deep into the lives and stories of remarkable individuals. I'm your host, Stefan Kazakis, and today we have a true marketing maverick. Yes, marketing maverick. Those two words put together certainly get my juices flowing in our midst. Our guest today is Thijs Brisselaar. Brisselaar, I love that name. That name takes me on a journey. Thijs, a high-performing, results-orientated marketing professional with over 12 years of experience. Thijs has not only made waves in the marketing industry, but also has a fascinating journey that takes us from the tranquil rural landscapes of the Netherlands to the bustling streets of Amsterdam and eventually to the vibrant shores of Australia. Now, trust me, guys, we will be speaking about marketing here today and digital marketing specifically. We're not going to be doing a travel show, although I just feel I just went on one. But as you'll soon discover, Thijs' story is not just about his impressive marketing career. It's also about his intriguing background, quirky hobbies, and a penchant for pushing boundaries. Thijs is no stranger to taking the road less traveled. And I'm going to say the road less stupid, right? While he could have followed in the footsteps of his economist and pharmacist brothers, he chose a different path, one that led him to the world of advertising and marketing and exploring how we create better opportunities in a space called business. His journey includes a stint at a company specializing in cutting-edge technical solutions for conferences and exhibitions, where he found himself on the brink of a sales career, but instead discovered his passion for digital marketing, all while pursuing his love for automobiles and home automation. Today, we'll unpack Thijs' story, exploring his professional triumphs, his automotive obsessions, and his experiences as a self-proclaimed manual car snob. So get ready for an engaging and insightful conversation as we explore the life and journey of Thijs, the man who adds icing on the cake to everything he touches. Get ready to be inspired and entertained as we delve into Thijs' extraordinary world right here on the Business Benchmark Group podcast. For those listening who don't know you, tell us a snapshot of who you are and what a day in the life of Thijs looks like.
That's quite the introduction. Thank you for that. And good to be here. Thank you. A little bit about me. So Thijs, like Tyson without the O-N bit at the end. You tried to pronounce my last name already, which you seem to struggle with a little bit. Good thing for you is that people struggle with it in the Netherlands too. So it's Brisselaar. So you get that wrong. I usually just use my mom's last name for that reason. That's the easy one. A little bit about me. I think you touched on a couple of things already. Originally from a bit of a rural part of the Netherlands, moved to Amsterdam to pursue a career in marketing. And I guess through different various jobs that led me to Australia, where I now run icing on the cake.
Yes. And how did you get to Australia?
My girlfriend's originally from New Zealand, or at least was born there. And we thought, the Netherlands is getting a bit boring. Let's see if we can find a better place to live. And New Zealand was quite far away. I know we have some New Zealand listeners, so hope I'm not stepping on any toes. But yeah, we thought Australia probably is a good middle ground between Europe and New Zealand.
Oh, look, and in fairness to New Zealand, that is the most beautiful country in the world. And so much to do, so much adventure, so much fun, and I'm going to go as far as saying very entrepreneurial and progressive as it relates to all cool things typically start in places like New Zealand. So no, you're and there are thousands, if not millions, of New Zealanders living in Australia who, in fairness, this part of the world is a phenomenal place to live. So thank you for just unpacking that and giving us some real understanding as to why did you move, literally many, 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 many miles away from your birthplace to commence and continue your life journey. What has been your number one biggest learning in life or business, just on that? And how has that shaped, I guess, who you are today and what you're pursuing today?
I guess it always works out. I think that's like, it's such a perfect example. When we decided to move here, everyone back home said, well, what about your retirement? What about your career? Is this a good decision? And it has been the best decision. And that's kind of been true every time I decided to do something that was a bit off the beaten path, I guess.
And if you think about, that as a learning, yes, it's very important to think about the end in sight or the end in mind or the final destination, retirement, careers. Well, careers are not something you start. Careers are something you finish, right? So I think going on that beaten track and how you've shared your life journey in that snapshot you gave us a moment ago speaks volumes of, follow your passion, follow your purpose, follow your life. And I think everything falls into place. And if you're ever going to do that at a stage in life where you can certainly do a U-turn and go back to where it started without losing.
Well, that's actually, I think, a really good thing that you sort of has given as an example. Like career is something where you end up. It's not necessarily something you set out to. Then the Netherlands, you're very much, it's drilled in you that it's very important to know about your career very early on. I got lucky that I knew very early on, but as I said, I have gone through various jobs that weren't necessarily on the most linear trajectory of my career. So it's interesting that, it's a good mindset to have that it doesn't really matter what you do, you'll end up where you need to be.
So we're listening to Thijs Vizelaar from Icing on the Cake, and he has two brothers. His brothers are, one of his brothers is a pharmacist, the other one is an economist, and Thijs is the rebel who is a marketing genius. So, when you think about that, Thijs, as it relates to careers, there's no doubt your brothers, as a reference point, made a very clear decision and most likely invested, many years at a tertiary level to absolutely start what will be a career for them. There are types of people and businesses and as you know intimately here at Business Benchmark Group, we work with trades and construction, and many of them are just hardworking operators. Like the plumber starts a plumbing business, the electrician starts an electrical contracting business, but they don't refer to themselves as an owner. They refer to themselves as a plumber or an electrician, which then go on a journey. So just sort of taking this a little tangential for a moment, many trades and construction businesses operate in local markets. The guy or girl that starts their business focuses on their local area. How can they effectively use digital marketing strategies to target and attract local customers? How do they absolutely continue to scale or build their business utilizing that local area marketing to attract local customers? Are there any specific tactics or platforms that work well for this specific industry? And again, we're talking about careers. We're talking about these individuals not only being the best plumber for the rest of their life, but eventually going on that journey where they become the most trusted and best owner of a plumbing contracting business, as an example. So are there any specific tactics or platforms that work well for this specific industry, trades and construction?
Trades and construction. So It's an interesting industry because people know trades and construction. So it's a different type of approach that you would take with customers than you would normally. For example, if you are a fashion brand, it's a lot about desire. And that creates the intent to look into the product and learn more about it. Whereas if you're a plumber or if you're a carpenter, people know what you do. And there's a very specific moment when they need you. And that's something that you can play into. That is an insight that you can use. And then there's kind of platforms that show up around that. So if we spend time on Instagram, for example, in my case, I look at a lot of cars. I scroll through a lot of car photos and I create an interest in a car. But it takes a long time before you make the purchase decision. Whereas if you have a leaky pipe, you need a plumber. So you would go on to Google, and it kind of shows you exactly what the right platform is. You go on to Google to search for a plumber, and then Google and Bing is similar. They have these great tools where you can target specific postcodes, specific areas, specific search terms. So you can really specifically talk to the right person that is at that point looking for your service.
Yeah, and I guess you know, as a participant and an exhibitor at our most recent summit in November, and the hundreds of business owners that were there as part of that conference. So the Business Benchmark Group Summit, very focused on our clients and our community across Australia and New Zealand, and their leadership teams. So having having sort of rubbed shoulders over 2 days and seeing what now is the Business Benchmark Group community, you know, it's fair to say that there's a strong desire for our trades and construction based clients to be better, to continuously be moving their business in the right direction, ideal job, ideal margin to the ideal customer. But in fairness, when it comes to marketing, which is one of those areas that can be a little bit of a, if you don't have the right plan, you don't have the right advice, you don't have the right budget, can be a disappointment. It could be like, oh God, I'm continuously spending time or spending money and I'm not really getting anywhere. So budget constraints can be a challenge for small and medium-sized businesses in the trades and construction sector. So what are some cost-effective digital marketing strategies they can implement to maximize, again, their online presence, their reputation, generate leads? You know, you're building trust through your online presence, you're generating trust, you get leads without breaking the bank. Now, breaking the bank could mean anything for anyone. So let's just use that as a general reference. If you have a budget, then that's your bank. If you go over your budget, then that's breaking the bank. So Tice, what are some cost-effective digital marketing strategies? So in the next couple of moments, if you can just share a handful that you feel you know actually work for trades and construction, and it works adequately within a marketing budget, whether it's $1,000 a month, $1,000 a week, or $1,000 a quarter, it works. It will work in terms of generating interest and leads and ultimately elevating the presence of the business. What are some tips you can give us there, some cost-effective tips in digital marketing strategies?
It's a good question. I guess it's the most common question, because if you're not in marketing, there's a lot of people saying that you should do this, you should do this. And I guess that is, I think, sort of the biggest one, is that whatever you do, choose a direction and stick with it. So don't branch off thinking this, what I'm doing now is not working. Try to make it work. Give it your best effort to try and make it work before you write it off. Because if you see this a lot, I guess that goes to the second point, is that a lot of people seem to think, and maybe we're taught that way, is that marketing is its own thing. Marketing stands on its own. You spend money with someone, you give someone that buys Google Ads, you give them money. Someone on Facebook or Instagram, you give them money, leads will come, and all of a sudden you'll have more sales. Treating it that way, as this, it's its own thing, especially if you outsource it, is very dangerous. Because, for example, if you hire someone and you say, I want to get more sales, and the person you're speaking to happens to do Google Ads, for example. In a lot of cases, that person will say, perfect, you have a website, I will get traffic to your website. Sounds like a very innocent sentence, but in that sentence, someone says, I'll send traffic to your website, and you specifically asked for sales. It's easy to miss, but there's quite a big gap in there, because someone sending traffic to your website is not the same as having sales conversations, it's not the same as actually closing people. So it's very important that you treat sales and marketing as one thing. And then when you choose a direction that you want to stick with and explore and optimize, that you optimize it for the entire journey and not just the one little thing that you think you need to do, or that someone told you that you need to do. Because you, in the end, as a business owner, just need more sales. And if that's the if you need more sales, then you should work backwards from that. So what are the things that you need to get? And obviously you need to get leads. And that starts with traffic. So traffic is the very first start. And the reason someone that buys Google Ads or Instagram ads or Facebook ads, the reason they say traffic is because traffic is the easiest thing to get. Because people that click on ads are not necessarily the same type of people that are interested. I often use the example, if I lie in my ad and say, if you leave your details, you could win a car, a lot of people will click on the ad. But then if the website never mentions anything about getting that car, everyone drops off. So I will have done my job as a marketer, technically. I've done the job, I've given you traffic, but in the end, at the end of the day, you're not actually getting more results as a business. So you want to be across that entire funnel and don't treat it as its own thing. And the thing that you're committing to, commit to it for a longer period of time. And that unfortunately does mean months sometimes, but be committed to it and try out things. If something isn't working, try something different. And if you see that the ads are working, but the landing page or the website that you're sending traffic to is not converting, address that problem. Don't just think if I send more traffic, it'll solve itself. You are just sending bad, good traffic to a bad landing page. And then from there, if you get leads and those leads are not picking up the phone, try to address that problem. If you try more channels, you will only spend more money, but you're still doing the same thing. You're sending good traffic to a website that doesn't work. It's kind
I
of
love that. My mind sort of paints a picture of just sharing all that. So firstly, imagine we had a dining table at home which only fits 12 people, right? So there's only 12 seats on my dining table at home. Let's consider that's our business and we have a capacity. We have a capacity as it relates to the number of clients we wish to serve or the number of jobs we wish to be serving. So start with the end in mind. What is our capacity? And what is our growing capacity? If you have a table of 12 in that example, can you extend that table to 20 without breaking the kitchen or breaking, you know, the budget in terms of, you know, affording everyone the meal they will be receiving, the service or the product, the quality of service and product, the meal? So I always think about it this way. If I'm clear about my capacity, I'm also clear about my ideal job at the ideal margin to the ideal customer. Now I'm talking about trades and construction. If I have those two things really clear, the size of the market, how much do I need to fill my growing capacity or my anticipated capacity? And big doesn't equal rich. Like, you don't need to be big, but you absolutely need to be rich in terms of how you attract and how you deliver and how you build a reputation. Those three things equal being rich, right? So if you have a table or a business that can serve 12 and you have 50 guests that you'd love to invite, well, then what are your qualification strategies? What are your education or reputational strategies? How do you ensure that your future clients, your prospects, are not only, you know, not only are they being invited to consider being a client or taking a seat on your dining table, but they are also continuously be provided value and a demonstration of what it will be like to be a customer of yours before they've even purchased. So the value proposition in accordance with a budget and choosing your channel, you know, and we're talking about digital. So it could be, you know, it could be any one of 5 or 6 or 7 channels that you truly devote your marketing dollars to is really important. So thank you for sharing that, because marketing is misunderstood. I believe marketing happens 24/7 and sales happen every other day. It's a continuum. It's a conveyor belt. You know, I'm qualifying, I'm educating, I'm converting. Then I have clients for life that become inadvertently my marketing machine. And I feel the basics and the fundamentals as it relates to how clients or businesses in trades and constructions need to be receiving advice. And, you know, we've had some great feedback from our community as to the conversations that you and your team had over the recent summit, Tice. And icing on the cake is a phenomenal example of, we don't need to be big, but we need to be precise and thought through, because marketing is the first step. Marketing is the first step to future sales. So let's do that right and also think it all the way through. Love that. And just on that, you know, online reviews and reputation management are crucial. Like, you know, before someone buys you, they've checked up on you at least 50, 60, 70 times before someone says, okay, I'm going to buy you, right? So online reviews, reputation management are crucial for businesses in the trades and construction industry. Tice, how can these businesses proactively manage their online reputation, encourage, satisfy, absolutely delighted customers to leave reviews and address negative feedback. Because, you know, again, a negative feedback doesn't mean you are bad. It's only when it happens 10 times in a row that you have a serious problem. But a negative feedback once in a while, it doesn't define you, but you have an opportunity to address that and to maintain a positive image in the digital space is ultimately a very important non-negotiable element, fundamental for small business. So, Tyce, how do small businesses in trades and constructions proactively manage their online reputation? How do you feel they could do that?
I think we can learn from the big guys here. This is a problem that's mostly been solved already. As much as we like to say that marketing is this super creative thing, we come up with new ideas all the time. Realistically, what you want to do is you want to build on things that have already been proven to work. And one of the things that we know works is that everyone does it. I'm sure we've all had an app open on our phone at some point that popped a pop-up that said, how likely would you be to refer this app to a friend? Or how likely would you be to give it a good review? Those sorts of things. What those all do is if you click on one or two stars, it'll send you to a form that either helps you to solve the problem or the pop-up disappears and you'll never see it again. But what it doesn't do is suggest that you leave a review, because you don't want to hide negative review, but you also don't want to necessarily make it too easy to leave a negative review, because it's not doing anything is the easiest step for everyone. So if we sort of take that approach, but then apply it to smaller businesses, just pick up the phone. At some point you spoke to this client about doing this project with them. Just check in at the end of the project before they've had a sort of an opportunity to leave a review, give them a call and ask them how they felt about the experience, if they are happy with everything. And if they are happy and you genuinely feel that they are happy, just ask them for a review. People are very keen to help, especially smaller businesses. And we're all kind people. We all want to help each other. So if you explain, hey, a review would really help me out, is it okay if I send you the link through an email or an SMS? It's very likely that someone will leave a positive review. I'm not saying that you shouldn't do that with someone that has a negative feedback, but you get on the forefront of it. You have an opportunity to try and solve the problem that they're having or the negative experience and try to turn it into something positive so that you can get a positive review out of it later on. I think that's a really good approach to this.
Yeah, so sometimes it's about, you know, removing the emotion of, my God, I can't believe someone just did that, versus how do you proactively address the review? Don't walk away from the review. Address it if you can and do whatever it takes to turn that around genuinely. Now, sometimes you can't turn it around. You just can't. And logic will confirm that. But minimize the emotion, go with logic, be proactive, and ultimately don't turn a blind eye to it, because that just means you may be agreeing with that negative review.
Yeah, if people are reaching out, it's kind of a sign that they want help. It's like you have to really mess up to get a properly bad review. So I guess there's two sides to that. There's also a bit of the numbers game, because if you get a lot of positive reviews and there's one negative, that one negative will not necessarily stand out as much, because a lot of people are really positive. So just going out and having that conversation, even if you can't solve the problem, you get a negative review. On the other side of it, you get a lot of positive reviews out of it. But at the same time, as long as someone is communicating to you, they will appreciate you reaching out and trying to solve the problem. Someone is not going to leave a negative review if they genuinely feel that you have tried to help them out. It's only when you say, I don't want to touch this anymore, that's when someone will try to lash out through a review, through a negative review.
And you know, just on that, I mean, one of the principles we have here at Business Benchmark, and we're nowhere near perfect, it's people won't remember you for what you did. They'll always remember you for how you made them feel. So even when something just doesn't go to plan, and sometimes it doesn't, sometimes things don't go to plan. I mean, we're not robots, right? And your ability to certainly just, again, remove emotion and show them that you care. Apologizing or being vulnerable shows someone that you care in that instance where it just didn't go to plan. And yeah. I just think just taking that as a little bit of DNA building into all our businesses is such an important thing. So truly appreciate, again, just from a marketing perspective, the importance of online reputation, ensuring that, you know, if you are truly building your customer journey, which for most trades and construction businesses is an offline thing, well, then keep on driving the offline customer journey system to be the champion, the beacon that leads your progress in the online world. You know, truly share your stories. Get people who knocked on your door that had an issue, a problem, something that needed to be solved, a home that needed to be delivered, in other words, a dream. You know, get them to be the spokesperson, the unofficial spokesperson for your business. And that's managing online reputation, where, you know, the sky is the limit. Keep on being that business. So really appreciate that. Just on that, and again, this is a little bit just curious, since we're talking about reputation, and I mean, your engagement at our recent summit as a principal exhibitor at the Business Benchmark Group Summit in November at the Crown in Melbourne. What did you see? What did you feel about our community, our amazing trades and construction business owner, small business owner community? What did you see? What did you feel? And what were some of your observations as it relates to that community?
It's just amazing. So we've been working together for some time, obviously, and it's just amazing to actually see the people that we are doing marketing for as well. So being able to speak to people, seeing how they receive everything, how they, the information that they get and what they do with it. It's just really interesting as well to see the things that people are struggling with as well. So obviously, I think, like you said, oftentimes people have learned a trade and they became a business owner over time, and they learned the skills to go along with that. And then seeing how they think about marketing and seeing how they look at those types of things, it's really insightful to get that information from them. It's just really good to sort of be in this group of people that are also business owners, that are also trying to figure it out, learning from them, learning together. And obviously a presentation from you were really awesome to see. Took a lot of that out of that myself, even though I'm not in the same industry. It still applies to all of us, which is, it's really amazing to see all of that.
Yeah, no, thanks. And again, I know, the importance of building community and making people understand that they belong to something that's going somewhere is very, very important. It's very important for us at Business Benchmark Group. Hey, Tyce, if you could go back and tell your 17-year-old self three things, what would they be? Now, again, you still look 17, by the way, but if you could go back and tell your 17-year-old self three things, what would they be, mate?
I'm not 17 anymore, but I still think I'm young.
Is that what you'd tell your 17-year-old, would you?
Yeah. If I look still like 17, I think my 17-year-old would be unhappy about that. I'm not sure. We all want to look a little bit more mature when we are young. I tend to not really focus too much on negatives. I think I'm really someone that believes that through your mistakes that you make, you become the person you are. And if you're happy with who you are today, I think it doesn't make sense to really linger. But I think I said before that it'll all work out, I think is the big one. I used to really stress, be super risk averse when I was a kid. I wouldn't take any risks. I also was very strict, for example, on building social relationships through work. I was like, no, this is work. This is professional environments. And as you grow older, you realize that a lot of those things start to blend together. So I think sort of it's probably more two, although there's this car I wanted to buy when I was about that age, which I could not afford back then, but has now become much more expensive. So so that's, I think, the third one. It'll all work out and be okay with being social through work and buy that car.
Mate, just out of curiosity, brother's an economist, other brother's a pharmacist. Tyce is a digital marketing genius. Mum and dad, what did they do?
Mum and dad, business owners. So my dad they retired somewhat recently. My dad was a veterinarian. My mom was a physiotherapist, but I take after my mom in that regard. My mom was quite business savvy, so they decided to start for themselves a veterinary clinic. Been doing that for 30 odd years or so. And they sold that recently. So we saw a presentation on the Business Benchmark Group Summit, someone talking about selling businesses. It was, I recognized a lot of things that he said, what people go through when they try to sell their business. So that, yeah, it was interesting. But yeah. So I definitely got the whole business mindset, I think from my parents, but I also always joke that I'm the dumbest one in the family because everyone went to university and I just did marketing.
Mate, and it's interesting, isn't it? We associate going to university with, being smart or being successful. And in many cases, that is the case, right? You know, if you can finish tertiary education, whatever it is, whatever you do, I feel it's a mark of starting something and finishing something versus being smart. And I always share this with my children who are 21 and 19 as we speak, who have one's finished his first year, the other one's finished his third year, and I resist referring to university being something that equals smart. I refer to it as something that is a commitment that you start and you finish. And if you can go through life starting things and finishing things, you're going to be very successful versus someone that always starts things and certainly doesn't finish. So if I can go back to my 17-year-old and tell my 17-year-old self that, I mean, I'm gray and I'm over 50 and not over 55. So that means I'm somewhere in the early 50s. And I still feel like a 17-year-old, which is a bit dangerous. But if I can go back to my 17-year-old self, I'd say, mate, whatever you start, finish it. And in fairness, I have finished most things, but there are some things that if only I just stayed a little longer and deeper, wow, that rhymes with being bored and rich. So, you know, very, very interesting. So back to you, mate. Back to you. Lovely. Thank you for sharing that about mum and dad. That just, again, just expands a picture in many of our heads. If you could remove all barriers and constraints types, and what project would you do and why?
If I had time, if we all had time, right? If that was one of those things.
Yeah.
I do like sometimes having like these big dots on the horizon to work towards. And sometimes they're very silly, but they're good motivation. I think you noticed already that I'm big on my cars. I have realized with all the electrification of cars that there's not as many cars that I would like around anymore. So I'd love to build something. So it's doing something actual, like tangible, whereas normally I'm on a computer all day. So there's building on a car, and then, which is going to make a lot of people uncomfortable in this podcast, I'd love to design a house at some point. So I'm very specific about the things that I want. But as I said, I realize a lot of people here are like, that's one of those guys. I would get a professional in to tell me what I should and shouldn't do.
My mind did go, okay, he's a Northern European, I get it.
I just like double glazing. Yeah. I just want double glazing in the house.
That's not an impossible thing to get here in Australia. That's cool. We can do that. Right. Good. Yeah. So it is important to be clear. So if you had no barriers or constraints, the project you will do is designed, obviously with some expertise, and build your own home.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. Absolutely. Just make it sure. I think you mentioned before the home automation that involves a lot of wiring, which I'm not allowed to do, can't do. So like those types of things, building the house and having those sorts of things built in from the start. And that feels like an amazing project to take on if I had time.
No barriers, no constraints. That's the project. Let's do it. What are our strategies we teach our trades and construction business owners here at Business Benchmark Group is business owner time, right? Setting that time aside each week to work, I guess, you know, the easy references on the business. You know, many of our clients work 50 to 60 hours a week, right? That's the typical working week. And what we say is 50 hours. 50 hours is about what it should be as an owner, a leader, someone that's, again, progressing their journey in their decision to start and lead something called their business. 50 hours. And then it's the value of that 50 hours. And what we say is 5% of your working week. So let's just say it's 50 hours. It's 2 to 3 hours a week that you can absolutely put into your working week diary and ensure that you are elevating your identity as a business owner, where you review, you reflect, you reset, you're aware of what's working, what's not working, what are you doing about it? So that's business owner time. So Tice, do you have any secret routines that help you stay productive in your business, in your life?
Several things, I guess, obviously. I think that probably the biggest one for me is the I make lists. And it's kind of the same as so we all work remotely here. So it's, and obviously everyone is like, you'll never do any work if you work for, there's no boss looking over your shoulder. I use a lot of lists and I treat the lists as my boss. So I add things to the list as they come up. And then in the morning, I open the list and I look at what needs to get done. I don't question it. I don't put on my business owner hat thinking, does this make sense right now? No, at some point I decided that this is the thing to do today. And I just need to get it done. And if I decide to start an hour later, or it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, that list needs to get done. My girlfriend often jokes about this because we do the small talk and she'll ask, what does your day look like? And then my answer is often that I don't know. Until I've seen the list, I don't know. But I also don't question the list. And that's been really, really an effective way to stay on top of all the projects that need to get done and to carve out business owner time.
I love that. Really love that. I mean, don't question the list. The fact that it's on the list at some point, that was important. I love that. Really love that. Really cool sharing there, mate. What's been your biggest, look, I can call it a learning, I can call it a failure, I can call it a aha moment, an oh shit moment, whatever, right? So what's been your biggest one of those in the last year, and why do you think that happened? And what do you think you could have done to perhaps not have that happen? Two questions.
Failure. We go back to the failure thing. So it's think a bit of a sunk cost fallacy thing, where you committed to something for a long time and stuck with it for too long, where in your gut and people around you told you that maybe this was not the right direction. I think that was this year the biggest one. I'm being politically correct here, but yeah, I've gone through some changes with the business. We had someone leave, and I think wanting to believe in the dream that you committed, that you've invested in for such a long time, combined with, I think that's mostly that direction, believing that thing that you invested in for such a long time will pay off if you just give it a little bit more time. Where even though if you objectively just stand back and take away the emotion, you know that realistically you could have pulled the plug a lot sooner.
Okay, so if I was to paraphrase that, is sometimes there are things in our life that we're 3 feet from gold and we must push through. And then there's some things that no matter how you shine or dice it, it's just dead in the water and walk away. Is that what you just said?
Yeah, absolutely. Look at the signals. You usually know if you're on the right track. And if it's taking a very long time, and I'm talking years, if it's not moving in a direction that you want it to, be okay with, cutting the loss.
Love it. That's great advice. Great advice. So yeah, look for the signals. Really cool thing to do for looking for signals is always have numbers associated with what results look like, or and numbers could be a year, by the way, or a month, or could be a time frame. Numbers, right? So love that. Really, really cool sharing. Hey, what makes you feel inspired or like about your best self? Like, if we were to describe your best self, what would that look like for Tice Vizsla at Icing on the Cake?
I think it's become pretty clear that I like my systems. I think that's I like if things, like setting up dominoes and pushing them over. I guess that's kind of like a good way to say it is. And that kind of applies to everything. It doesn't just apply to like very like an Excel document where you have a nice formula that works perfectly. But for example, I recently had someone on a team that just did something, and I had kind of been pushing him to just take more ownership. and try to give him the tools to do it. And he just did it. And he brought it up. He was very apologetic about it. He said, I tried to sing and I championed the hell out of it, because that is really nice to see sort of things working out that way, where you try to set something up and you work towards an end goal and things start to fall into place, where you push over the domino and it falls all the way.
Love that. If you could have a dinner party with just going back to the dinner party thing, it's sort of been lurking in the back of my mind, from that marketing piece we spoke about earlier. But if you could have a dinner party with just three people, you and three others, dead or alive, who would they be and why have you chosen them?
Well, we just spoke about being social. I don't know if I would be great at dinner parties, so I'd probably pick people that would talk amongst themselves. I guess that car direction, that car industry is interesting. The old, I don't know if we're gonna, probably none of these names are gonna resonate with anyone, but I think
it's your dinner party, mate.
True. this is the CEO of Volkswagen Group a long time ago, throughout the whole Dieselgate thing. His name is Ferdinand Piëch. Whole Porsche thing has been there for years, but he is an engineer that joined Volkswagen and basically built himself up to run the company. And his approach is very engineering wise. And then I think someone like, I'm not even going to, an Italian person called Luca that ran Ferrari for a long time, which is kind of the opposite of that, I think, right? I think his name is Luca di Montezello. I'm sorry if there's any Italians listening. But he ran a Ferrari after Enzo Ferrari died, and he made it the marketing brand that it is today. So he didn't go at it from the engineering approach. He made it into a marketing conglomerate. It's a best-known car brand in the world for a reason, and that's partially his doing. And then let's throw a wild card in. Let's throw Elon Musk in, which is... some people might say a bit of a snake oil salesman, but there's no denying that he's really good at selling and marketing.
Who do you think would say that?
That he's a snake oil salesman?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd probably be a little bit accused of that at times, where it's like he does make a lot of promises that either are not kept or are produced by a fair bit. But at the same time, the fact that we're all driving electric cars now, we're all looking at electric cars, is his doing. And people will say that he's not an engineer and he didn't invent it. That might all be true, but without him, we wouldn't be driving electric cars today.
And it's interesting, right? I mean, and you're right. I mean, the juries are certainly split and getting splitter on Elon. However, he is a trailblazer.
Absolutely.
And if he puts 10 ideas out there or promises 10 things and he delivers on six, those six are going to be big. Right.
Exactly.
They're going to be cutting edge or testing the boundary sort of six, right? So you look at someone's track record and like it or not, you've got to say, wow, okay. You know, yes, he's got a lot of things that probably need some huge personal development on, right? But he's got a lot of things that we need to look at and say, that's what going to the edge looks like if you want to go to the edge.
Absolutely. He definitely does that. He's not afraid to take risks and go all out.
So he would be an awesome, just from that, just that pure little, just that little contrast that we're seeing more and more of as his persona in public is becoming more and more, obvious to see, or clearer to see, or more accessible to see, one of the three. And that might be just his way of going to the edge again, right?
Yeah.
Really separating those from us, right? So he's quite interesting the way he does his thing. And I'm not convinced it's scripted. It's not. It's just the way the guy is, man. He's clear in his own mind what he wants. And he's also okay not to be popular.
Yeah, and willing to risk it all, I think, is an important one. He's willing to put his back against the wall and then try to claw his way out.
And without sounding, and I want to be very careful because we have an audience here that just needs to hear this from the light I'm about to share it. Unless you're prepared to lose it all, you won't make it. And the smarts in the room have a skill, and it's a learned skill, which means you have studied and have got a few scars in your body. Unless you're prepared to lose it all and have a plan B, C, and D,
you don't
get to make it all.
Well, that's positive to hear for someone that's very risk averse as me, that has tried to let that go over the last several years.
The key is in the power of your plan B, C, and D. That's the key.
Yeah.
Plan A is non-negotiable, as we're doing plan A, when you have an unbelievable deep plan B, C, and D.
You kind of have to.
The parties that have the most alternatives, the party that has the most alternatives always wins. Always remember that. So Elon has a lot of alternatives. So he can lose. And he can lose big. But he's got a plan B. Always does. Anyway, so that would be an awesome, awesome. And again, thank you for sharing the piece around Ferrari. That's intriguing. And the Volkswagen Dieselgate, which would be like, how do you manage that from a leadership perspective?
Oh, he was.
Could they have done that differently, good or bad? I'm not saying what they did was good or bad. I'm just saying, could they have managed that differently? And just to unpack that in a private dining setting would be like, holy moly, that's talk about leadership.
It's very interesting because he eventually was outed because of that. But
yeah,
and he claimed never to have known about any of it. As an old person, but he claimed to have never known about it. But it was very much a product of his leadership, which that makes it so interesting. Is he's an engineer and he looks at the problem at hand and comes up with a solution. And that solution might be
when you're a leader, even if you didn't know about it, you tell the world it was your decision, man. You own that decision.
Well, he didn't. So that might be fun for a conversation with Elon Musk there, who's not afraid to say what he thinks.
Hey, so as we're finalizing this amazing sharing here, Tyson, thank you for your time and the insights, not only on the digital marketing piece, which we went really deep there for those that were listening, but also just again unpacking, you know, the personal and the person that you are, which is always fascinating. I mean, humans run businesses, not machines run businesses, and every human has a backstory. So what are your views on personal development? And should you invest? And does it fast track, in your opinion, success?
Super interesting question, because I was the traditional skeptic about personal development. I thought you need to make your own mistakes to learn from them. And at some point, someone said, yes, that is a super valid strategy to go about it. It takes a lot of time and costs a lot of money. Maybe you can learn from someone else's mistakes. And I had, for some reason, just never thought about it that way, but that rang true. And ever since, I've been more open to learn from other people's mistakes. And when presented with a problem and trying to come up with a solution, I tend to think more about what other people have done before me. And that has shortcutted so many things. Couldn't be doing what I do today without sort of having gone through that process. But I did have to hit that wall where someone said, maybe you should learn from someone else.
We are speaking with Thijs Vizsla, director and founder of the amazing digital marketing studio Icing on the Cake. You can find his details below on the podcast. And final question for you, mate. If your mother and father were witnessing this conversation, mother or father had something to say as a parting shot, as a finishing piece in this conversation, what would your mother say to you as it relates to this conversation we have just had?
Putting me on the spot here. I certainly hope she says she'd be proud, but I think she will be, because a lot of the things that I do, I've learned from her, the way to think about things and those sorts of things. And I speak to her regularly because, like you said, you can learn from other people's mistakes, and people are all just trying to figure it out, and they have figured out a lot of stuff along the way. So I speak to them a lot and get advice from them. So yeah, realistically, I think I hope they say that they are proud and that I hopefully am doing things the way she would do it, I guess.
Isn't that interesting? I love it. The little apple falls off the big apple tree. Hey, Tice, thank you so much. And you know, you're sharing your collaboration here with our community of Business Benchmark Group. You're an amazing business, but more than that, a significant integrity first human being. And well done, buddy. Keep on doing what you're doing, and thank you for all your words of wisdom and sharing in this conversation during our podcast here today. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, and thanks for having me.
For more information about Business Benchmark Group's coaching, education, and training programs, visit businessbenchmarkgroup.com.au or call 03-9001-0878. If you liked this podcast, please rate it on iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud, and leave feedback as well. Stefan shares so much value in all his podcasts, and we encourage you to go through the archives and listen to other episodes of the Business Benchmark Group podcast. Thank you for listening.